Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of Hard Hits Wrestling Podcast. I'm Hitzer.
I'm Hardy.
I'm Shafiq.
This week we're going to be talking about NXT TakeOver Portland.
Ooh.
I really, really love these Sunday NXTs, guys.
Yeah, me too.
Ever since they've kind of broken away from following a major WWE pay-per-view, don't you think that these NXT events have like more time to breathe? Because usually when big things happen, it's immediately overshadowed the next day by WWE stuff.
I mean, yeah, overshadowed good or bad, like, you know, but still overshadowed.
Because usually the narrative amongst hardcore fans is NXT is so much better. Rumble, SummerSlam.
But then you always have to talk about how bad the main event was.
Yeah.
But this time, you know, nothing like that.
No, so we can focus on, you know, the Johnny Gargano heel turn and things like that. You know, you still can breathe. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And NXT TakeOver Portland, I think even in the history of great NXT TakeOvers, one of the better ones, if you can imagine, because... You know, for 5 or 6 years, TakeOvers / Arrivals have been by far the most consistent pay-per-views in any promotion, I think.
And
NXT just continues to like raise the bar. So they went from like 4 matches per card to 5 matches per card. And I think this is the first one ever that featured 6 matches on one card. And it was still a
3 hours. Yeah.
And I mean, NXT just does it perfectly. NXT is the premier brand for a reason. I mean, maybe not in terms of viewership, but I think in terms of bell-to-bell action, I feel like maybe AEW has storytelling, like better storytelling than
here
them.
And there, yeah.
But in terms of just pure wrestling, right? NXT and NXT UK has it.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, look at when we covered Blackpool the last time and how we just loved it.
Our unanimous match of the year last year was Tyler Bate versus Walter.
Yeah, Walter, correct. Yeah.
So, I mean, NXT always has a very, very high bar.
In terms of quality lah.
But even with that high bar, I feel like Portland, I don't know, maybe because it was an especially hot crowd or
it was a hot crowd.
Or just maybe because all the matches just lived up to expectations. Mm-hmm. But this was just such a damn good wrestling
show. It was. From bell to bell, man.
Bell to bell, yeah.
Honestly, there was no stopping at all. Mm-hmm. Like, there was no like, oh, let's go pee during this match.
No
such thing.
No.
Right? Because it's a crisp 3 hours.
You're thinking about the 3 hours. Let's take out like the 10 minutes, the Poppy performance also.
Yeah.
It's still sub
3 hours. Yeah.
It's insane how tight it is.
Yeah, that's true.
They could have easily added one more match and it would have been okay.
And we'll still be, with it.
Think of the TakeOver quality matches that we'll be getting on Wednesday this week. Velveteen Dream is coming back to take on Roderick Strong.
Yeah.
That's a TakeOver quality match, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Leo Rush versus Jordan Devlin for the Cruiserweight title. Ooh. That's a TakeOver quality match, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
And they could save it for the weekday show, you know?
That's crazy.
You know? That's how deep the talent is.
And that's why all the main roster guys that we would love to like come down to NXT, we also like, oh, no space.
Yeah, Mustafa Ali, Cedric Alexander, guys who just aren't used that much.
Really, there's no space. There's no
space, when Raul Mendoza is not getting a spot, a guy that good.
We love Raul.
Yeah. We love Raul. He's been a jobber for 6 years now, but we love Raul.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Best jobber, honestly, if there was a best jobber of the year, it will always be Raul Mendoza.
We love you, Raul. But
before we dive into the main card, let's give you a rundown of what we're going to cover this week.
Sure.
Yep.
We've been gone for 2 weeks, so there's been a lot of stuff I want to cover also. Portland's our main topic. But I also want to talk about NJPW. They recently did the New Beginnings show in Sapporo and Osaka.
To set up the storylines for the year.
Exactly. Because Wrestle Kingdom is more of a season finale. And this is when they're really gearing up new storylines. So NJPW has been great. I recently watched a Revolution Pro Wrestling show in Britain.
Oh, Repro.
Which featured, the British Heavyweight Championship match between Zack Sabre Jr. And Will Ospreay. So as much as I like to... A lot of people like to say that Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate are like the best British wrestlers in the world.
They are those two also.
I mean, good argument for it.
Yeah.
But then you can't say it with a straight face when Zack Sabre Jr. and Will Ospreay are out.
There is
also
an argument.
Yeah.
You can have a conversation about it.
Correct. So we'll be talking about all of that. But let's kick off with NXT TakeOver. Do you guys watch the pre-show?
No.
Okay, so...
There was a pre-show.
30-minute pre-show on YouTube.
Oh, how did it go?
It was interesting because Mansoor was a panelist.
Mansoor?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Our Saudi guy.
I think it's this, because Super Showdown is coming up. I think he's just there to showcase like, hey, I'm from Saudi.
Yeah.
I have a show coming up.
It's his busiest time of the year.
I know, yeah. Remember the last time I wrestled against Cesaro last year?
Yep.
Great match, by the way.
Yeah.
But Mansoor, another classic case of a great NXT talent. It's just not being used, right?
No space.
No space.
Yeah.
Unless you're in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
You know.
I think they could have done, they can do like a NXT 2 show.
NXT 2?
I mean, if let's say, hypothetically, right, if they opened up another day for NXT.
Like NXT Dark. You know, like
You could have an entire whole show with their second second tier wrestlers.
Yeah, and it'll still be
awesome.
Fire.
And we're not even talking about NXT UK.
No, we're not. Just normal NXT.
Yeah.
But to be fair, a lot of the second tier wrestlers are wrestling on 205 Live lah.
That's true too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that can be considered their B show also.
But when I say second tier, I don't mean they're not good, huh?
I just mean less popular.
Yeah, less popular. That's about it.
Yeah. You know, I think what's interesting about NXT is probably the women's division, which has stood out for the longest time.
Oh, yeah.
The deepest women's roster in any professional wrestling division.
Yeah.
I mean, outside of like female exclusive promotions like Stardom and all, all the co-ed, let's say, promotions, the NXT roster for women is just crazy.
It is.
To the point, right? Like, can you think of any other promotion where the standard storyline is love triangle or fight over the belt? Women, right?
Yeah.
You see that a lot on the main roster, right?
All the time.
Yeah. The fact that like two people nowhere close to the main event, Dakota Kai and Tegan Nox, has their own feud independent of any match.
Any match. Yeah.
Independent
title.
Of any belt. Yeah. They're just fighting because they have their own
they
story.
They hate each other.
Yeah.
What, can you tell me one mid-card women's story in Raw or SmackDown? I can't, you know. They're only fighting for the belt
cannot.
As a story, or they're fighting over like Rusev or Bobby Lashley.
Yeah, that's right. That's the only one I can think of, you right? Know? There's a fucking like guy involved.
Yeah.
Not being like some feminist person lah, but it's just that it's such a trope that has been going on forever.
Yeah.
Correct. So you got Dakota and Tegan on this card.
Yeah.
Think about all the women that are not on the card. Io Shirai is not on the card. Candice LeRae is not on the card.
That's right.
Tony Storm is not on the card. It's fucking crazy. This roster is nuts.
Holy shit, a lot of people are not on the card. Man.
This roster is nuts.
Yeah.
It's crazy, guys. No wonder main roster is dipping into NXT for their women.
I mean, why not?
I mean, they got Shayna Baszler to fight Becky, right?
Yeah.
And
then they're getting Charlotte to fight Rhea Ripley. So.
At WrestleMania, motherfuckers.
Yeah, because I was wondering whether it was going to be on TakeOver or WrestleMania.
Yeah, it's WrestleMania.
Yeah,
it's
of course. Of course it's WrestleMania. All right. Let's kick off with one of
Wait, can I just say that that idea was a Vince McMahon idea, apparently.
For Rhea?
It was?
Yeah. The Charlotte taking on Rhea Ripley.
Wow. Mm.
Triple H came out to say that it was a Vince McMahon idea. It wasn't his idea.
Interesting. Huh. Interesting. So, in a conference call.
Yeah.
I listened to that a bit as well. I just want to say, like, straight up, like, in our Rumble review, I pitched this exact story.
You did.
I said, like, wouldn't it be cool if, like, the winner of the Rumble challenged the NXT Women's Championship?
You did.
You know? And I was like, but it's too far-fetched, blah, blah, blah.
Not anymore.
It happened. Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm so happy about this.
I tell you, someone from WWE is listening to our podcast. And either podcast, I think. I got a feeling.
Shout
out to you.
They troll all the like wrestling podcasts and just get ideas from all this fantasy booking.
Hey, give us our money, bitch.
Or get Hidze.
Get Hidze, We'll be happy for him.
We'll be happy for Hidze to be a creative member.
Oh my God. But I really think I'll be, if I were to join the main roster writing team, right, I'll just be beaten down.
You will.
By Vince and his stupid ideas.
By Road Dog.
You start in NXT UK,
Oh, you know? True. Yeah. I wouldn't mind writing for NXT UK.
Yeah, you start from there.
Because like I think even most fans aren't familiar with NXT UK product, but I am.
You are, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
True. All right.
Sorry. We tangent off quite a bit on.
But you know, still NXT related.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, I think, one of the best feuds that's been happening.
Oh yeah.
Over the last few years, Keith Lee versus Dominik Dijakovic
for
the NXT North American Championship. Two of the best big men with a historic rivalry.
Yep.
Just listening back. Our very first year on the Hard Hits Wrestling Podcast, at the end of the year, we did our 10 best matches of the year thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this was a year where Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada had their classic match.
Two classic matches.
Mm-hmm. Johnny Gargano and Ciampa had two classic matches.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But I picked a PWG match between Dominik Dijakovic, or Dijak at that time, versus Keith Lee as my match of the year.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I re-listened back, and Hardy was so skeptical of me, saying like, who the fuck are these guys, blah, blah, blah.
I can't have no idea who they are.
At that point, he hadn't joined NXT yet.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But like, my argument was that I think eventually you see them in NXT, then you get what I'm trying to say. Like,
well, I get it now.
So like, this is the type of level of match that they delivered on the indies all the time.
All the time, yeah.
You know, they were 5-on-5 in the indies. They are 2-2 in NXT. So they're tight. Like, this is like the 10th.
The super rubber match.
And I always felt that all the matches were good, but they were always on NXT TV, or they were on PWG, or random indie shows.
Yeah.
Like, for them to really blow it off, you need a bigger stage.
A takeover stage
like this. So this is the perfect time to blow it off, you know. Keith Lee versus Dominik Dijakovic. What do you guys think about this?
Oh, god damn, Keith Lee.
Oh, bask in his glory.
Exactly.
Oh,
yes, exactly. So again, thank you, Shafiq. That was great. First of all, Portland, thank you for such a fire crowd.
Mm.
Right? They really came out. You don't come out for the Trailblazers games like this. I don't understand.
Not even when Dame puts like 60 points.
Exactly.
You're like, okay.
Yeah. But god dang, when Keith Lee and Dijak, okay?
Yeah.
Dijak.
Oh my god. We have seen this so many times.
I know.
Now.
Yeah.
I've seen it more than you guys because I watched it.
Yeah, exactly. So we have seen it maybe 4 times now, right?
But you're always like, wow, right?
How?
Every time.
Right? And there's just some little innovation that they put in. Or just a little twist that's different from previous matches.
Mm-hmm.
So this one had this idea of like grit and just hard hitting and just not just constantly trying to out-muscle
each other. Yeah.
And it was so believable.
Yeah.
You know, I think Dijak is one of my favorite wrestlers now, lah.
Yeah.
You know, I always raved about Keith Lee.
Yeah.
But man, Dijak.
These two are destined for greatness, like. Yeah. Definitely.
Some of them are big.
Yeah.
So you know,
Vince will be like.
will love them eventually, lah. But I want to say that this is how you should open a show.
Yeah.
The same way that they opened Blackpool the last time, where you have a fire opener. And goddamn, this was a fire opener. A good 20-minute match.
All takeovers are fire openers.
Exactly.
I had a little sense of, again, these two. Like, the build-up for it. Yeah. I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
I was wrong. I was very wrong.
Yeah.
A lot of people, it's a bit like the argument with Ciampa Gargano.
We've
seen it so many times.
Yeah.
But then, like, the argument goes out the window the second they start wrestling.
They start wrestling, exactly.
And then they're like, I want one more. Yeah. Let's do one more.
We don't mind.
But these guys are so good. Like, Keith Lee is the guy who's been getting the shine lately.
Yes.
Because of his Survivor Series appearance, Royal Rumble appearance against Brock Lesnar. And can I remind people, right? A lot of people think that these guys are the 2.0 of big men. Brock Lesnar was doing shooting star presses way before any of these guys did.
Yeah. I mean, even though he got one concussion out.
That's why he stopped doing it.
That's why he stopped it.
Can you imagine if he didn't get that concussion?
He'll have
He's like these guys, but he's Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
So Brock Lesnar in the day, like I hate it when people diss on Brock Lesnar. He was such a good wrestler. He was this level of
He was
wrestling.
When he was young, yeah. He was the youngest champion, remember?
Yeah.
Dijak came out in a Kobe GG hoodie.
He did.
Yeah. Nice little
tribute as well.
Yeah.
He did. Very nice tribute.
On All-Star Weekend.
That was nice.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was All-Star Weekend also. Yeah. Amazing. Keith Lee is the guy who's getting the most shine as a machine, right?
So much shine.
Survivor Series, Brock Lesnar and all of that. But I felt the real star of the match was Dijak.
It was Dijak,
definitely.
Yeah.
His springboard 450 cannonball from the ropes onto a seated Keith Lee on outside the ring.
That was fucking insane.
So dangerous.
In between the tables.
In between the tables.
That was so scary.
The accuracy of it was mad.
Because of how big it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So because of how big he is, so you have that visual of that huge guy just launching himself into the chair. Oh my god.
Like, it's one thing when Mustafa Ali does it, you know?
Which
is great too.
Yeah.
But it's one thing when a guy who's like 7 foot or whatever, you know?
What the fuck?
And that was after like a series of like mad chops.
Where he asked the quiet
Those were crazy.
But right before that, all that whole sequence, you really had such a great build-up.
That's true, yeah.
Throughout, there was just Keith Lee, Dijak just not giving up. And the back and forth was so perfectly timed. Everything was so perfectly done in this match. I couldn't find something that I wasn't interested in or made me bored.
Have you seen two guys of that size do a Spanish fly off the top rope?
What the?
Yes, it was them.
Well, them lah.
Yeah, it was them. They did it again.
They did it again.
And they landed it better this time.
Yeah.
The first one, Keith Lee kind of landed on top of Dijak.
That's true. I also enjoyed all the counters to each other.
Oh my god!
Right, because they learned. They know each other's moves, so all the counters made sense. And yeah, so that was great. Adding in 20 minutes, crisp 20 minutes. I don't know. It was just.
Perfection.
Yeah. This was the best way to kick it off and the best way to blow off a long-running feud.
Correct.
I really like the show of respect afterwards.
At the end
also,
of the match, yeah.
Keith Lee actually like lifting him up, putting him on the second row.
That was amazing,
yeah.
I was screaming a lot during this match.
Yeah.
Like by myself, yeah.
Typically, NXT TakeOvers have relied on a hot tag opener, usually.
Yeah. Mm.
So for them to use two big guys is a different approach.
Yeah.
But two big guys who can work like four small guys, you know?
Yeah.
Honestly. They are four small guys working.
Correct. <Yeah. time.
laughs> But can I say that also, Keith Lee has brought a really good shine to the North American Championship.
Yeah.
Much needed.
This is how you look at the lineage of the North American Championship and you see that there
is a
proper lineage now.
Mm.
A lot better than the Universal Championship. You know, like this belt is slowly becoming that belt where it is a workman's belt. Yeah.
The Intercontinental. Well, yeah. Not like the NXT Championship is not a workman's belt.
No, no, yeah, yeah, I know yeah, what you mean, but yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's a very good second belt to the NXT Champion belt.
Correct.
Yeah. And there's some prestige to getting this belt. And yeah, I feel that Keith Lee is one of the champions that is putting a bigger rub on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, I can't wait to see more.
So right after this match ended, right?
Oh, yeah.
I felt really bad for the Kotaka and Tegan Nox because I felt like, who were
how are you gonna follow that?
Who is the terrible booker that put them in this position? Yeah. You know, this is so sad. This is a hot feud, you know.
Yep.
One of the feud that is kind of like NXT's bread and butter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where, I betray you, and then we have a hot feud. Nothing like
no complications. Crazy. Yeah. You know, just it's I
a
hate
very,
you now.
A simple story told very well by two competent workers.
Have one gimmick, which is the knee brace lah, which they don't use anymore.
True. Yeah. Yeah. But both of them have had ACL surgery.
I mean, that's how they became tag teams.
Me
correct,
too.
Yeah, team kick. So, I was very afraid for them. I was like, oh, yeah, lama.
I really wanted this to be a better position.
Yeah, poor thing, these two. But then, honestly, where could you put it in this card?
Correct, But,
we were proven wrong.
They just goes to show that, like, what the fuck do I know?
Exactly.
Because this match was just as good as any other match on the card.
Oh, God.
I think it's rare to see a women's street fight, but they did it very well here with some very innovative spots.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think about this?
I like that immediately, like 5 seconds in, you have Dakota Kai coming out attacking her.
Yeah, attacking her during the entrance.
Yeah. Yeah. So clever, right? Yeah. And how Tegan Nox got through that.
Mm-hmm.
And how she, you know, had her own counters and she got the better of Dakota Kai, and then you had the match proper. So that was a good build because, you know, after a hot fire match like that, how you want to, have some heat again is you do an attack out of the ring. And the way that Dakota attacks Tegan, right? I love that. I love this Dakota Kai.
Mm.
Like, her transition from face to heel has been near perfection.
Mm-hmm. Heel Dakota Kai is really hot.
Yeah.
That too, right?
Yeah.
For some reason, she's 10 times hotter than she was. And she was really, I already had a crush on her a long time ago, but something about it, right?
Yes.
But the match itself, the quality was right there. La.
Mm.
And Tegan Nox is really one of the best women wrestlers out there.
Right? She's Loki.
She's been out for 2 years, you know, if you think about it.
Because of the ACL.
One ACL surgery in the first Miyang Classic.
And then the second one
ACL
after
surgery
that.
After the second Miyang Classic. You can. She would have been way further along in the NXT career if not for that.
If not for that.
But it just goes to show, like, I think if any other wrestler who's just of mediocre quality had two back-to-back ACLs in different knees, she'll be out, right?
Yeah.
It shows that the PC kind of sees something in her, like, this is worth keeping around. This is worth keeping around. Yeah.
I mean, she was supposed to be, you know, one of the rising, the stars already by now.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, like, but you're right, the two ACLs.
She has the face for it as well.
Everything, the attitude works and all that. And angry Tegan Nox is awesome.
Mm.
Ability.
Excuse me. Yeah.
I think just the overall spots and everything
was crazy.
It's crazy. And I just have to say that for this night in particular, the tables did not give a fuck. None of the tables broke.
Yeah, they were like, not tonight.
Until the last part lah, when what's her name? The other girl that came in.
Rhea Ripley and
No. During this match.
Rina. Yeah, but that was the spot where
it didn't break.
It didn't break.
Her head bounced off.
Oh yeah, the second table didn't break, right? I thought there was two tables.
No, just one.
Oh shit, she just hit the floor.
She hit the table. She bounced off the table.
Sorry, I confused you with another thing.
It looks so painful, and I think they might want to reconsider doing table spots for really, really light goals. Yeah.
They might want to like cut the tables even more.
Correct,
Or, you know, just safer breaks, like a power bombs.
Where the back is flat on the
like, because she was throwing her off the top rope, and then she even lifted her above the top rope, right?
Okay.
I think the thing that's still playing in our heads is what happened to Kairi Sane at the TLC.
She got concussed.
So it's a bit dangerous.
But
she was woozy throughout that match, man. She was gone after that.
But they've learned lah. You've seen from what they did with Alexander Wolf, they're a lot safer now already.
Alexander Wolf was immediately taken.
See, if Alexander Wolf was in that TLC match, he would have continued for another 20 minutes. Like, not knowing what's happening.
Yeah. What now? Okay.
But that was, remember, that was a brilliant save by our good friends
Bobby Fish
and Kyle O'Reilly.
Amazing. Great stuff. I love this match. Great match with I don't like the finish.
Yeah.
Me too. That was the only thing that I might have a little issue with.
Who is she?
She used to be known as Reina Gonzalez. She uh-huh. was in the initial Mae Young Classic.
Yeah.
She was injured for a time.
Oh.
If you remember, she used to wear like assless chaps and carry like a lasso, cowboy boots and all
okay.
that.
Oh, that's her. Okay.
Yeah. So they've rebranded her as Raquel Gonzalez. For I don't know what reason.
Yeah.
Because Reina actually means queen in Spanish. So yeah. That's a better name. But whatever lah, Raquel Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Can also that works lah.
Yeah, but I don't understand the motivation. Yeah.
We'll find out in NXT.
Yeah, but you're supposed to be wondering why. La.
Yeah, la, yeah. La.
But still, it's still...
A bit jarring. Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
It is. But I have more faith in them pulling off this storyline than the main roster. So I'm okay. Because
so this continues, yeah?
I want to see where this goes. Yeah.
Because Dakota Kai herself looked confused as to why...
Yeah. Like, why did you help me? Yeah. That, he shared that look at the last part.
So I think I don't know what the explanation is going to be lah, but
yeah,
it might be because Raquel feels left out in the same way that Dakota Kai felt left out during War Games.
Oh yeah.
Reina was actually a tag team partner of Rhea for like a year before this on house shows and stuff.
Okay.
They were being paired up as a team lah, so that could be a part of the story. But I'm willing to see where it goes.
Me too.
NXT is one of those like I'll give the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Because the quality was there throughout the entire match.
Yeah.
And this match wasn't too long. It was like 13 minutes. You know.
Yeah.
A street fight shouldn't be too long.
Yeah.
Because of all the damage you take, you shouldn't have like a 1 hour classic kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I just have to say that I wish they had given Raquel Gonzalez some squash matches on NXT or something.
Before to just give her the
Because it felt like a Dark Order debut where nobody knew who they were.
Yeah.
It would be more impactful if you knew who that was lah.
Yeah, it was a bit weird, the reactions as well.
Unless you remember her from the Mae Young Classic lah.
People were quite confused, I thought.
Correct, yeah.
They were like, who?
it's the Dark Order reaction. Nobody, or Butcher and the Blade or whatever. Nobody knows who the fuck they were. But moving forward, I trust NXT to do the right thing.
Yep.
Next up is Finn Balor taking on Johnny Gargano.
Fucking the good thing about heavy shuffling is all the sound effects you get.
That's not Ableton, guys. That's Shafiq.
That's Shafiq.
I love this match because it felt like such a clinic. And I think after two hot fire, bell-to-bell, very fast-paced matches, you require two competent, stable technical wrestlers to slow it down.
Yeah. Madness.
So I think they spent the first 10 minutes of this match slowing it down.
Yeah.
And
such professionals.
Such professionals, right? Yeah.
It's crazy.
Before they built it back up again. Yeah. You know, so it's a command of pacing that I think a lot of younger wrestlers don't have.
But these are the two legends, lah.
Correct, yeah, more than legends, lah. Like a very, very veteran savvy. Mm, they knew what to do immediately.
Yeah.
And they knew how to pace the match.
There's a lot of like circling. Yeah. There was a lot of like very methodical wrestling that was going on.
It's to make sure that the audience doesn't get exhausted in the way that we get exhausted during WWE events.
Yeah.
I think that was brilliant of these two to risk losing the crowd by shutting it down for a while and then building it back up again. I the match itself was great. Like technically all the counters, all the moves was great.
Yeah.
But it was the pacing that really like won me over.
Yeah, same. Yeah. Strange, right?
Yeah.
There is a pacing that I can take a breath now.
Yeah. Needed one.
Because we had half an hour of just crazy action bell to bell. So this was just a good, nice like all right. It's two iconic guys.
Yeah.
Right? Johnny Gargano, Johnny Wrestling, and you know, you have
last time Mr. NXT, the new Mr. NXT.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and then you have Finn Balor. Like,
yeah. I also felt like at first I'm like, why are they slowing it down? You know, I was one of those idiots as well. And I'm like, I realized, I really needed that.
I know, right? Because you just have I think maybe lost focus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A bit. Yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm really into this now.
This is crowd management, like 101.
By two consummate professionals.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, towards the end, I think the last 10 minutes of the match, it went nuts. It went full throttle once
they
again.
They could easily just switch it, these two.
Correct, yeah.
But that was perfect for this match. So they built it up and that last part was just brilliantly done.
Some of the stuff they did, you know, the shotgun dropkick off the announce table into the barrier. So good. Finn Balor now, with his new heel things, he just seems stiffer.
Yeah.
You know, like yeah. the coup de grace looks like meaner.
It looks
like,
so painful now.
It looks like he puts his full weight. Yeah, in. I'm sure it's safe lah.
And he doesn't roll off as quick now.
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
He usually does, right? He goes and then he rolls off very quickly.
So that you don't kill the guy.
Yeah, yeah. This time he just like lands a bit. Yeah.
He's like yeah.
Like it looks full for. I'm sure it's not, but it just looks so good.
Yeah, it does.
I'll never understand the mechanics of the coup de
grace. Of a coup de grace. Yeah, yeah.
Fuck this.
I don't want to. Yeah. I don't want to know.
Want to try after this?
No.
Okay.
I try new.
There are a couple of things with Johnny Gargano that I feel like on paper annoy me because he has a standard moveset.
Yes. He does.
You know, his slingshot DDT, his slingshot spear, stuff like that. You know, I know what he's gonna do every match. Yeah, it's that moveset. You know.
Yeah.
But just the way and timing and
of everything.
It's so unexpected the time.
Yeah.
It's amazing lah. Mm. Like I don't know how Gargano must have a genius mind to put like these spots together.
He knows how to choose spots.
Johnny genius.
He is Johnny Wrestling genius, and I love how this match plays into the story of the main event. Also,
it does.
It would be so easy for us to not like him. I think Johnny. About it all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but his match quality and his mic work is actually excellent stuff.
Correct. Yeah, because he's a bit of a white meat, baby face.
Yeah.
Which is why half the crowd doesn't like him lah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is why turning him heel is a good move actually.
Yep.
He can still continue delivering good matches, but then he can just earn the boost. Yeah. You know? Just lean into like how. Insecure he is, you know, but oh, I want your support, I want your love, but you know, half of you like never gave a shit, blah, 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 you know?
About the quality.
Correct, again, fantastic.
Yeah.
Up to this point, I don't know what the match of the night is.
Yeah.
I think
it's like all three were like at that level of like a four.
I was like, this is how strong the pay per view is, right?
Yeah.
That Rhea Ripley versus Bianca Belair was, I think, the weakest match on the card.
Yeah. Like, and that was a good match.
Such a strong match too.
That's like a 3.75.
Like in any WWE pay-per-view,
it might be match of the night.
It might be match of the night.
Yeah, easily.
But on this card, it was like, meh, that was okay.
Yeah.
And that was a really good match.
I really wish Bianca wasn't put in this position.
Me too.
On Black History Month.
Me.
Yeah.
Because I know she had to lose lah. Of course she had to lose. Like storytelling wise, it wouldn't make sense. You know?
Yeah.
And Rhea is the kind of wrestler that she doesn't need shenanigans to win.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. You know? So she will lose clean.
Yeah.
On Black History Month, as she's wearing the Black History in the making robe
all over
with her parents ringside.
Yeah.
You know and all that. Okay.
But she put up a fight.
She put up a fight lah.
Yeah.
You know.
A good fight.
She was very strong. Bianca Belair. Gorilla pressing Rhea Ripley
is the best.
It's not the same as I've seen her do that to like Casey Catanzaro, for example.
But that one's a small
girl. This is not the same.
It's like throwing a
real fucking Ripley, man.
Yeah, this is not the same. Rhea Ripley is like three times her weight or whatever it is, you know. This is a very, very good match, you know. And then of course, you know, Charlotte comes in
at the last part,
lays it out and says, "I accept your challenge for WrestleMania."
See you at WrestleMania, bitch. What?
What drew a little What made me more excited was that as Charlotte was walking out, she attacked Bianca also. So, I mean, is there a triple threat coming up or what do you guys think?
Nah, I think it's just to like tell Bianca that was for last week.
Okay. The double KOD.
So, I think that's
I don't think it's going to be a triple threat.
I feel it would be a mistake to make it a triple threat.
Mm.
Just because you want to focus on Rhea and Charlotte.
Yeah, at least not for WrestleMania.
Not for WrestleMania. Yeah. Please don't be WrestleMania triple threat. I don't want the WrestleMania triple threat.
Mm. Well, the last mini event, I mean, Ronda, Becky, Charlotte.
Which was a mistake.
Unnecessary triple threat. I think actually it will be more of Charlotte and Bianca will have kind of a mid.
After this
transitional feud, maybe they have one or two matches on NXT TV in the build up. Then she beats Bianca and then moves on to Rhea. You
know? But sad, right? See, Bianca has to lose so many times.
Correct.
In Black History Month.
All in February.
Yeah, hopefully they save off the Charlotte match until March.
I feel Bianca needs to win this month.
I know, like let her squash Tenera Conti or something.
Yeah,
something
yeah.
lah. Just give her win.
Or the Filipino girl.
Who is the Filipino girl? Mia Yim.
No, the one who lives in LA, has braids. What's her name?
But Amber Moon lookalike.
What is her name? Amber Moon lookalike. Yeah.
Yeah, go destroy that girl.
Amber Sun or whatever. Like.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
He said Amber Sun. That was so lame.
No.
He said Amber Sun, bro. Fuck, that was so bad.
That was like the end of 500 Days or something. Yeah. Hi, my name's Autumn.
I'm so sorry.
Sorry, listeners.
Sorry, listeners.
And then, oh, what's... Oh, yes. And then we move on to the tag team title match for the NXT Championship. The Broserweights, Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne, taking on the Undisputed Era, Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah.
I mean, we've already kind of talked about this off-air, but can you just please talk a little bit about Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne's journey to Portland? Because I think the skits they've been doing are so funny.
What do you think?
Felt like an SNL sketch.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, but like we were talking about how perfect it is to put like Pete Dunne with Matt Riddle, because like Pete Dunne has
unexpectedly like, right, because when the Dusty Classic brackets came out,
yeah,
we and both when they put these two random wrestlers together,
like why
everybody was like, wow, that makes no sense. Yeah. Yeah, but they've just grown, and just goes to show that NXT sometimes does know better than us. Yeah.
They do lah.
Yeah,
let's not ever doubt them again.
Like you can doubt WWE, Raw and SmackDown all you want,
because we do. Yeah.
But NXT, I think, really knows what they're doing more so than the fans. You know?
That's true. That is crazy.
Yeah.
That they know that much, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah, they know how to play us. Yeah. I know you would doubt this, and then we'll win
you
over.
You go,
so this is always confusing for me, is that why can't they translate that to main TV? Main roster.
I don't know. I mean, main roster has tried several like mismatched pairings, odd couples.
Yeah.
But very few have the distinct personalities of Pete Dunne and Matt Riddle.
Yeah.
To the point where they play off so much off each other that it's hilarious, you know, from the skits of them, you know, like hijacking Triple H's jet, you know, basically like stowing away in the boot, you know, and flying over to Portland, or just the way that they've managed to turn Pete Dunne's lack of personality into a personality.
They were on a paddle boat at one point, guys.
Yeah,
that was with the trophy.
They were on like a swan, right?
Yeah.
And then like Pete Dunne was asking, why are we here? And then Matt Riddle was just like, I just do this to think, bro.
Yeah, don't worry, bro. I mean, like Pete Dunne has a personality of a washing machine.
Yes.
And then
great wrestler, but you know, so boring. A bit of a Roderick Strong though.
But a great wrestler. Yeah. Like his wrestling, like you forgive him for everything because of his wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why his reign as UK champion was so great.
2 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and we enjoyed every moment of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So but I mean, you have to move beyond good wrestling.
Yeah.
Yes. You have to develop some sort of
character.
Connection to the crowd via personality.
And this is the best way.
That is what the Matt Riddle partnership has given both of them.
Yep.
Both of them, yeah.
Because I feel like Matt Riddle can be a bit much alone also.
Yes.
Like too much personality.
And so you have Pete to like kind of balance it out.
Correct, yeah. Yeah. And Pete sometimes gives him that look like, oh, this is so annoying. Up, you know? Yeah. As if to acknowledge to the audience, yes, we know it's annoying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Matt Riddle can also enliven a pretty much like dead in the water personality that is Pete Dunne. So it's a perfect marriage.
Can I just say that Matt Riddle has been getting into like weird controversies online?
But it's over his Goldberg comments and Brock Lesnar.
Now the Brock Lesnar thing.
Yeah.
I want to see what all this comes out to.
Yeah, yeah.
He gets apparently a lot of heat for it, right?
Yeah, because he goes off book.
You saw the Goldberg, that Goldberg interaction, right?
Yeah, and Rumble, he interacted with Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar confronted him also.
And Matt Riddle just stands his ground.
Well, he's an MMA fighter.
And I know, because he can fight.
Yeah.
And he's like just standing his ground. And just like...
But like Brock would still destroy him, I think.
Yeah, like, because Brock is so big. You know?
True, yeah. I think with Goldberg, he has a bit more reason to be confident.
Yeah.
He would definitely wipe the floor
with Goldberg. With Goldberg, yeah.
But Brock, maybe not.
Yeah. Because Brock still trains. True. Brock still does his MMA training.
True. But I don't know. Personally, right, if somebody did a circus show like Bellator or something, did like Matt Riddle versus Brock Lesnar, I would pay so much money to watch that.
Money. Take my life savings of $12.
Wrestling fans would want to see that.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Because I actually think Matt Riddle has a chance.
A small chance, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Do we think so?
Because of Brock Lesnar's diverticulitis and his last two fights, you know, he has like this giant target on his stomach, you know.
Yeah, just kick his kidneys like over and over again.
Alistair Overeem like one knee and then he just collapsed.
Yeah.
I don't know, but we're getting off topic.
Yeah, sorry.
Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne versus the Undisputed Era. Yeah.
Can we say that Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly were great also in this match?
The wrestling in this match
was top undefeated. Notch.
Undisputed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really top notch wrestling.
Oof.
In terms of the tag team division, it's hard to beat NXT also. I mean, the women's roster
in
gets
all divisions, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Cruiserweight or whatever, but like, With tag team wrestling, AEW seems to like want to have that mantle of like we are the best in terms of focusing on tag teams.
Yeah.
And they do have more focus on tag teams because most of their matches are tag team matches.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of just like quality, it's hard to beat the stuff that NXT puts out, you know. If you think about like Street Profits and The Revival and DIY and all the great tag teams, all the great tag teams that were in the Dusty Classic that we just saw, you know, from NXT UK. Even,
exactly.
You know, it's hard to beat this roster in terms of just pure quality. Tag team. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a bit afraid. I mean, look at what has happened to Street Profits since they moved up, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Street Profits used to be that opener, you know. Like them versus like Oni Larkin and Danny Burch and stuff like that, you know. Yeah. Just to tear the house down.
Yeah.
And now they're just like kind of a comedy
a
act.
Gimmick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so I hope neither of these guys
please don't
ever move up, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, Undisputed Era is best kept in NXT, lah, I feel.
Yeah.
They're so pristine move up there. Soon,
if Adam Cole moves up, they all will move up.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
I mean, the only good thing is if an entire stable move up is that you have that entire stable.
The only thing is now they're not going to call up so many people anymore they are live on TV and they're competing.
And therefore they need these
guys. So they
need
stars.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it's the other way around. They're bringing down.
Down people. La.
Yeah. Yeah. Guys like Charlotte, guys like Finn Balor, you know.
Fucking Sanity went up together, right, as a stable.
Yeah,
right.
But they split. Nikki Cross went to do her own thing.
Nikki Cross is the most successful. Yeah.
Then,
who would have thought?
And then Alexander Wolf went to Imperium.
Gone.
Yeah.
And then, you have Eric Young, who is.
Oh, Killian Dane.
A jobber.
Killian Dane is solo.
NXT, yeah.
And Eric Young is a jobber.
Eric Young is a jobber.
Mm. Eric Young isn't that great of a wrestler, so he fits that mold as a jobber.
Yeah.
So it's fine with me.
But Killian Dane becoming, you know, he's damn good, lah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, his big recent monsters? Matches against Pete Dunne.
Exactly.
Yeah. What I loved about the match was that I think Undisputed Era has shown over and over again they have great tag team chemistry.
They do.
They are the next revival in terms of psychology of tag team wrestling, the smarts and technicalities of it. But what is surprising is that in such a short time, Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne have developed all this tandem offense that looks so good and makes sense for them, character-wise and technique-wise, you know.
The moveset compliment.
But the moveset compliment, exactly, you know. And each of them can deliver great hot tags.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, when Pete Dunne goes nuts or when Matt Riddle goes nuts, it really feels like the energy there, you know. Fantastic. Who would have thought that they would put the belts on this makeshift tag
me
team?
Me too.
This is how much they've gotten over, guys.
They've only been together since 8 Jan.
Yeah, during the match.
Wow.
The Dusty Road.
That's insane.
It's been 1 month, man.
Yeah.
So in 1 month, you know, the Broserweights have become sort of a... I don't know, like, suddenly, out of nowhere, you know, they became such a special tag team.
Yeah.
In a way that I think, like, Miraz, Kenny Omega, and Hangman Page, who are also now AEW tag team champions.
Yeah.
So, that was also a makeshift tag team against, like, polar opposites. So, both tag team divisions seem to be doing the same thing.
Yeah.
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 But I actually think the Broserweights are better than Kenny and Hangman Page.
Ooh.
Actually, that's not a very controversial thing to say. I think you're right.
I think storytelling-wise, Kenny and Hangman Page
have a better story.
Yeah, it's more drama.
Of course, this one is a very, very easy tournament. We did well, and then now we're fighting for the belt.
And then now we're doing sketches.
Yeah.
The gimmick is straight up out of Attitude Era. Straight up Attitude Era stuff, you know.
It works,
And I think NXT's whole vibe is keep it simple. You know, and they keep it simple with all the gimmicks, all the stories. It's great.
Oh, and, in the middle of this match, there was a point where Matt Riddle was hitting Pete Dunne, and then Pete Dunne was hitting
Matt Riddle by accident.
By accident, right? Yeah. Did you all feel like,
correct?
Is it the end already? No,
we all we all thought for makeshift tag teams, right? Yeah. With like Finn Balor,
there's all this miscom.
Yeah,
miscom. Roderick Strong when he turned on Pete Dunne to join the Undisputed Era.
Yeah.
We all like, this was makeshift tag teams always to me, right, in my head, because WWE has trained me to think this way.
Correct.
Will lead to a feud between them.
Yeah.
You know, always, right. It's such a refreshing change of pace that it's like, I understand you made a mistake, you know, let's keep working together, you know.
Yeah.
It's different, and like, NXT so just knows it. Yeah.
Because it's logical, because they know, I mean, look, Pete Dunne is one of those guys that he's like the king of makeshift tag teams. I mean, his partnership with Pete Dunne, his partnership with
made it all the way to the
Roderick
finals.
Strong made it all the way to the finals. He didn't win because he was betrayed by Roderick Strong.
Yeah.
And now this time, you know, he won the finals, you know, with a partner that was reliable.
Yeah. They build this story.
It makes sense. It actually makes sense.
I think this is great. I actually think the title switch must have been impromptu, because I don't think they would have. I know they thought that Broserweights would catch on, but I didn't think they would catch on
this fast
to this degree, right? And I think they made the right call here, because I feel Undisputed Era, despite the prophecy and everything, they don't actually need the belts.
They don't, yeah.
Like, UE are going to be over regardless.
It was kind of boring when they had all the titles.
Yeah.
No, but there is a good visual to
it
have.
It was so good. Yeah. But we don't need it anymore. Long. Yeah.
The good thing about that visual lasted less than 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, they gave you that visual, they reveled in it for a short bit.
And then North American loss.
Yeah. Because they don't need it. It's not like where every single member on the roster like owns a belt and then they're dominant for like 5 years.
Because they're not in charge of creative, that's why.
Yeah.
If they were in charge of creative, if you give these wrestlers to be in charge of creative, I think they'll still do a good job.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel that the wrestlers nowadays don't have the same ego as the wrestlers last time.
Yeah. There's no Hulk Hogan or Shawn Michaels politics.
Yeah,
Like Shawn Michaels, I love Shawn Michaels, but he's probably the most guilty of backstage politicking.
God, it was mad.
I find it hilarious that a lot of the old school wrestlers, like, they walk around backstage and then they're so offended that everybody gets along, that they play video games together. It's like, you know, where is the passion for like getting a hit, you know?
Yeah. It's a different passion.
Everybody's just friends, let's just do good matches together.
Yeah.
It's a
love for the art.
It's a healthier, less toxic environment, where Randy Orton isn't like showing his penis to people or like shitting in gym bags, you know.
And you see the quality as well from just people working together happily.
Yeah.
Like, it just comes off.
Yeah.
I mean, once in a while you get an Enzo here and there, but like for the most part, it's really not.
But that's why they get kicked out of the company before you know it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
When they create disharmony within the locker room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this locker room is way different than the locker room back in the day,
Exactly. Which is why like teams like Broserweight and Undisputed Era are prospering.
Yeah.
You know, just like getting a hit, just based on talent, based on merit, you know, kind of stuff. Amazing. Then we move on to the final match tonight.
Ooh, this final match.
For the NXT Championship, Adam Cole versus Tommaso Ciampa. Tommaso Ciampa, if you recall, did not lose the belt.
Nope.
He had to relinquish it due to a neck and back surgery. In fact, people at that point thought he might not even walk again.
Yeah.
The fact that he recovered so quickly.
Again, a miraculous recovery.
Yeah.
Tommaso Ciampa has been just plagued with so many injuries. Shoulder, knee, back, neck. And he's like the bionic man.
He's like John Cena.
He keeps coming back. He keeps coming back quicker.
Every time.
He keeps looking stronger. His match quality hasn't declined at all.
Yeah.
John Cena.
He really is the NXT John Cena.
Because John Cena is famous for coming back within a very short amount of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I mean, amazing when we saw Ciampa return like 5,000 months before he's supposed to return.
Exactly. A bit like, you know, like Ibushi or Takahashi, you know, and Adam Cole himself has kind of like broken out to be the star of NXT now.
Yep.
Yeah.
More so than Gargano,
the charisma of Adam Cole.
It's a bit weird because if you think back like 3 years ago when Adam Cole was kicked out of Bullet Club by Kenny Omega.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, Kenny was doing all these like classic matches and stuff.
Yeah.
And if you had told me like, you know, just in a couple of years, right, I would think that Adam Cole was a better wrestler than Kenny Omega. I would have been like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
But I'm at a point where I think Adam Cole was a better wrestler than Kenny Omega.
Huh.
I watched Adam Cole live.
Whoa.
I mean, you've also watched Kenny live.
Yeah. I watched Adam Cole when he was ROH champion. Take on Jay Lethal.
Nice. Big flex.
Big flex there.
Yeah, it's something Adam Cole can't do, but it doesn't matter.
No, because why it was interesting was that was in the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah.
And like, the Japanese fans went Adam Cole baby. Japanese fans.
Yeah.
So that was great.
Now you know. I know, like when Undisputed Era like crashed the UK takeover, like you could tell the entire crowd just wanted to do baby.
They wanted
to. They were so excited,
let's do baby now.
But yeah, pairing together two guys of this talent is a bit of a foregone conclusion how good the match is going to be.
Yeah.
But like, even then, right, I mean, I was still shocked by how good this match was.
Yeah.
Me too. There were so much surprise spots that just like, just got me off my chair.
Yeah.
So many of them.
Yeah, me too.
Like, the kickouts were like... Perfect.
I did feel like kickouts were technically great.
Yeah.
Timing wise.
Yeah.
I did feel there were a bit too many.
Too much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Slightly overbooked.
Yeah.
Really? I don't mind. I really don't mind.
NXT Takeover main events tend to have this epic feel where like you kick out of everything.
Yeah.
Where suddenly everyone's the fiend.
Suddenly your Panama Sunrise doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. Which is what like people kind of hate about Roman as well, no?
Sure. Yeah.
At pay per views.
Roman.
Reigns.
Yeah, he kicks out of everything.
He kicks out of everything. Yeah,
yeah, he kicks out of everything like on Raw.
Yeah,
on Raw.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah.
He kicks out of cancer.
He
kicks out of cancer.
Oh, like, but that's why the crowd likes him.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Like with Adam Cole and Tommaso Ciampa, they only do this like once every 3 months.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
when it's takeover time.
So there's still that. Okay lah, we give it to you lah.
Yeah, like, this is a special. Like, you're not doing this all the time. Yeah. You know, the no selling. Sometimes can annoy me a bit.
Yeah.
But I'll give it a pass when it's takeover main events.
Yeah. I mean, it's still an American promotion lah.
Yeah.
It's still not NJPW where finishers are protected.
Not really. Like, even NJPW has been like, you know, the Wrestle Kingdom, the fucking like 50 Rainmakers that Naito kicked out of. You know, it's.
But the Rainmaker has no longer become the invincible kind of thing.
All the Destinos also that he kicked out of, you know. I'm just saying, like, it's not country specific.
Yeah. It is, okay, yeah, you're right.
It's just modern wrestling. People kick out finishes. Like. It happens in main events. So I almost feel because of that, I can't question the logic of it. Because when you start, it becomes a trope. When you start questioning the logic of like, why does an Irish whip work, you know, then like it ruins wrestling already.
Why doesn't an Irish whip work?
Don't do that.
Okay.
That's what he's trying to say.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Shit. Okay.
Yeah. Like, well, why when you do a drop kick, you also don't hurt, but when you fall down from a, you know, whatever. Yeah,
don't. You know, once you start doing that, then you...
Oh, no, like a rock bottom, like your whole front of your body hits the mat too.
A rock bottom is the same as a flatliner. But why is... You know,
my God.
Don't go into this. You will just ruin your suspension of disbelief.
Like a DDT is actually a spear.
Yes.
I'm out. Bye, guys.
So when you start thinking about that, so I'm just gonna like put it down to a trope.
Yes.
It happens.
But to be honest, every single kick out, I was screaming.
I also.
Because I was convinced because Roderick Strong lost last week.
Yeah.
Undisputed Era just lost tag team belts. I thought, oh, prophecy is about to end. Goldie is coming home to Tommaso Ciampa.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I thought the ending was overbooked because it's like, oh, they got to throw the whole UE at Tommaso Ciampa, so he has to overcome them all. Correct. You know, and then he's gonna get the belt.
And he almost did.
Yeah. And but the thing was like, I felt there wasn't any suspense because I knew Tommaso Ciampa was gonna win. So I was pleasantly surprised with the Gargano's work.
Yeah, that's true.
And then and Cole retaining, because I legit did not see that happening. I thought Cole has been champion for a while now. Tommaso Ciampa should get it back now. And then suddenly it didn't happen.
And I was like, wait, Gargano?
Yeah.
What the fuck are you doing?
And then he just he could have come out earlier if he wanted to help also, right?
Yeah.
And then the perfect timing was just him looking at Tommaso.
Yeah.
Well, he needed to come out when the ref was out.
Yeah. So, but that look of just both of them staring at each other, I thought that was such a good visual.
Mm-hmm.
Right before he smacks him in the head with the belt.
It's like, no belt for you.
What do you think the story is? What do you think the motivation for Gargano?
You know, like I was about to say, my prediction from the Royal Rumble podcast was that all UE is going to lose all their titles and then they're going to move up.
Yeah.
But I was wrong, unlike Izzy. I should just give up.
No, it's fine.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the UE is going to move up because NXT really needs them at the moment.
They do. At the moment,
But I do feel that this was the right decision because I think it leads to a triple threat match in TakeOver Tampa.
The Gargano, Ciampa.
I
want that now.
It's one way to keep Gargano, Ciampa fresh.
Yeah.
Because Gargano, Ciampa has wrestled like 5 million times, right?
I mean, great.
Yeah, great. But all great still, matches, but like you need like an extra differentiating factor, which Adam Cole provides.
I was thinking it was going to be a fatal four-way with Finn as well.
Interesting.
Because Finn beat Gargano.
Yeah, all four of them.
The thing with Finn is, right, I don't think they want to put the belt on him because he might move up at any time.
Yeah, no, he lose, but you know, just to add him as power in the four.
But I also don't think that they want Finn to lose because Finn hasn't been pinned or submitted.
Yeah, so he won't be pinned.
Yeah. Interesting. But anyway.
Probably wrong again. Let's just listen to Hitze.
No, but like, I feel like Finn is one of those people that doesn't need to be in the title picture. Like facing Finn Balor is like almost a title itself, you know. He's like that kind of guy.
I mean, in NXT, la. Yeah.
Okay,
I mean, ex-champion.
So they just keep doing that with him. So like someone else will feel with Finn.
Yeah.
With that being that person's title shot, lah.
I mean, the good thing about NXT, that gives a lot of avenues on where to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And all the avenues that they can take. It's going to be fire.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the Dijakovic match, you're like, where is he going to go now? Mm. Right? His face gives me a few times. I'm like, it's okay. They'll figure something out.
They will.
Yeah.
I mean, Dijakovic Finn Balor is an option. Yeah. So if they want to. You know, and that will be a killer match. Also,
it will.
You know?
Yeah.
So they have all the options in the world.
They do.
But with the main event scene, it's clear like it's going to be Ciampa, Cole, and Gargano for a triple threat match.
I really don't mind.
Yeah.
And I feel the story is that Gargano, after losing to Finn Balor, feels that, oh shit, maybe I wasn't as good as I thought I was, you know.
Yeah.
And now my rival slash friend, who I became friends with for, yeah, I don't know why, because he came back.
Yeah.
Now he's suddenly going to win the NXT championship. Yeah, like, I can't have that, you know.
Yeah.
It kind of makes psychological sense. Yeah. Yeah. Which is why I'm okay with it.
Yeah, me too.
I really like the storytelling. Maybe the Raquel thing like didn't quite work for me, but that one remains to be seen.
Yeah.
You know. But for the most part, this was an A+ pay-per-view, man.
A+. Honestly. Thank you. Thank you, NXT.
Thank you, NXT.
We can't wait for NXT TakeOver Tampa, which will be right behind WrestleMania.
Yeah. That's WrestleMania weekend?
Yes, on a Friday, yeah, I think, because the Hall of Fame induction is on Saturday.
Saturday, right?
Yeah. It's going to be Pirate Team, guys.
Yeah, okay. Or please bring back Kairi Sane, you know.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be at the Buccaneers Stadium.
Not TakeOver, though.
Not TakeOver, I mean the main WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if they don't do something with Kairi Sane's entrance there, I will be so
there
sad.
Is a freaking pirate ship in the damn stadium.
Ship, yeah. If he doesn't come in a ship, we riot.
Like Rusev on a tank, right?
There's a pirate ship in the stadium that has cannons that can fire out.
Oh my god, they should fire her out of the cannon. And then she drops her insane elbow.
It's all the way at the top.
Oh, okay. Okay, maybe not. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not sort of related to TakeOver, but like
it's
related to NXT.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about Shotzi Blackheart's like little tank?
Oh.
Have you seen it? Like she comes out
the cutest thing in it is the cute, world.
La. I actually don't know what to think of it. You know?
You don't like
it's cute. I sometimes like it, I sometimes do. I just don't know whether I like it or not.
It's weird, I think it'll take some time.
I think it's working for her because she has nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't mind it.
The helmet. Yeah. It's just cute.
Tangle.
Yeah, yes. I think that's what they're going
That's what they're going for.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, Shotzi Blackheart is another person that, like, you know, they could easily be a star.
Yeah.
I think the problem with modern NXT is that there isn't so... they can't rotate stars anymore.
Hmm.
Because last time it used to be like, Bobby Roode, like, oh, you have like 6 months, you know, to make a mark here, then you move up.
Yeah.
And Andrade, then it's Aleister Black, and so on and so forth, right? But now because they have a set roster, it's harder to bring in fresher talent to take over.
Yeah.
So there is a danger that NXT can become stale. Because NXT, the reason NXT has always been fresh is because
rotation of the stars.
It's always new stars. Yeah. Always, like, the main event scene changes every 6 months.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's true. Maybe the schedule will just be lengthened, but I think that's fine. Yeah. Oh, we'll see.
Sorry, guys. There was one moment in this entire takeover
where
you could have taken a break, which sucked. It was the fucking Rob Stone brand. What's his name?
Robert Stone brand
promo. Cream, yeah. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, Chelsea Green is a
just get on my face.
Chelsea Green is a great wrestler, but I we were correct in our prediction that she's being positioned as the diva who basically thinks too much of herself and not as good as she thinks she is.
Yeah.
You know? Which is a fine character for a lower cut female character development, but doesn't need to be on this takeover.
Yes.
Yeah.
But okay.
Yeah, like I mean, Roderick Strong had a promo also la.
Oh yeah, that's true.
So you could also go to pee during that la. So,
that's true.
I mean, I love Roderick Strong la, but when he starts talking, it's like
That was the last what's her name?
Kathy Kelly's
last promo.
Kathy Kelly, recently resigned from WWE. This was the last day at work at NXT. I think it was such a good heelish thing for Adam Cole to do.
Yeah.
He said like, now you can
now go. Now you can go. But I think Kathy Kelly will land on the feet. She's awesome.
No, you guys watch the Triple H Facebook Live post show?
No.
Yeah, so Undisputed Era came and then inducted her into the UE as the honorary fifth member.
Aww.
Yeah.
That was weird after all that.
I know. But it was a non-kayfabe moment.
What?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's a non-kayfabe moment.
They apologize and you know, we've been busting your balls, but only because you're so professional and all of that, blah, blah.
I got a feeling she'll end up in the XFL.
Yeah.
Just like Charlie. Charlie's in the XFL also.
Interesting. Yeah, but
Charlie's like full on sports commentator now. Mm. Like she sometimes take over like first take when like Molly Karim is no longer on leave or something.
Ah,
then
see.
Charlie Crusoe take over, that kind of thing. She like full on sports commentator.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. Maybe what's the name? Kathy Kelly will go down that route.
That route also, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But like it's interesting. it's nice because like if you go to I went to Undisputed Era's Facebook yesterday. Wikipedia entry yesterday.
And the fifth honorary member.
Katy Kelly was like listed as the fifth member of Undisputed Era, which is hilarious.
A non-wrestler.
There's even a picture of her doing the UE sign there that they put into the Wikipedia.
Which is nice. Like at XFL, she enters to the theme song.
Boom.
Thank God they have like no longer linked WWE to the XFL.
they would definitely do it.
Pocketty, yeah.
Okay, so I was like, you know that the XFL just started, right?
Yeah.
So they have this. So after the game is done, the winning team gets to chuck some beers lah. Mm. Oh. So their sponsor is by Bud Seltzer.
Okay.
The new Bud drink lah. Yeah. Seltzer. Okay. It's a seltzer drink. So they chucked that down lah. So some of them did the Stone Cold Steve Austin one where they hit the cans and then they drink both the cans. Yeah. And there's like all these little wrestling references in the XFLs. Like they do their celebrations and all that. There's a bit of like I think someone did like a wrestling move. I can't remember.
Okay.
But yeah, they kind of little nod to the WWE.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
Nice.
But even though the XFL has really like tried to distance itself as much as possible from the 2001 fiasco lah.
Yeah.
Oh, they edited Katy Kelly out again for members on the right side.
Yeah.
It's okay, next time.
But
24 hours.
She was a member for 24 hours.
That's all you get.
Actually, Hardy, towards the end of the show, is going to be talking a lot about the XFL also.
Just a bit lah.
It's kind of resting adjacent.
So very adjacent.
Why not lah?
Yeah.
But let's talk about some wrestling first.
NJPW, man.
NJPW recently had the New Beginning show.
How did that go?
I'm going to be talking about Osaka first, although Sapporo happened first. Osaka was the bigger show.
Okay. Okay.
Osaka had a lot of matches that were set up at Wrestle Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Number one of all the matches that you should watch, John Moxley versus Minoru Suzuki. Which we talked about during Wrestle Kingdom, right? It's such an interesting direction for the IWGP US Championship because it's now kind of like the hard bastard championship where Moxie is facing guys like Lance Archer and Juice Robinson.
Those big guys.
Not big guys lah.
Lance Archer's big.
Tough bastards. Pretty brawlers kind of thing lah. Yeah. Because for the longest time, the NEVER Openweight Championship has been kind of distinctless. There's no personality to it. There's no rhyme or reason or meaning to any of it.
I mean, they change hands in Singapore.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how you know that like it doesn't like make sense. Like.
Yeah.
No, but I'm talking about the Did I say never?
You said never open. US to open lah.
Which is the same
champion.
Thing, like,
I mean,
it has no rhyme or reason or meaning either.
Yeah, yeah.
So I like that it kind of has like this vibe right now. It just gritty brawls between two tough fuckers, you know.
Yeah.
And John Moxley is one of those premier tough fuckers lah.
Yeah. American style.
American style versus like legendary King of Pancras, Minoru Suzuki.
Yeah.
What a great! This is not like John Moxley's traditional deathmatch shenanigans. Mm. This is just, it feels very violent and gritty and just very stiff forearms to the face, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, he's fighting Suzuki lah.
Yes.
Who's the king of like shoot fighters lah.
Yep. It's almost like hardcore blood sport. If you have ever seen Josh Barnett's basketball lah. So John Moxley comes out with his eye patch. I love that he's keeping kayfabe with AEW.
Nice.
You know? So he comes out with his eye patch. He comes from through the crowd as Moxley always does. Yeah. And he doesn't walk to the ring. He walks to the ramp. And then Minoru Suzuki smiles. It's like, oh, let's fight on the ramp. So Minoru Suzuki then he detours into the crowd. He takes two steel chairs from two crowd members.
Why not?
Yeah, and then like he walks up to John Moxley and then he gives him a chair. Oh. He takes a chair. Then he starts swinging.
It's a duel.
Yeah. It was great. Moxley took a hell of a beating, as did Suzuki. Suzuki has this very crazy Japanese Yakuza type smile every time like he gets really hurt, which is quite scary actually, you know. And it was the first time I've seen like Moxie kind of freaked out by like how much punishment this guy can take, you know.
I mean, this Minoru Suzuki
lah. Yeah.
Yes. I don't know whether the chair was gimmicked or not, but there was one straight to the hit chair shot that Minoru Suzuki took where the plate of the steel chair
dented.
Not dented, like it flew away. Like it broke away from the chair. So
there's a hole in the chair.
So it's only left the metal rim.
Yeah.
The place where you sit.
The place where you sit, yeah. It just, oh like, my God. It flies out And then Minoru Suzuki is wearing it like a fucking like noose like around his noose neck, you know?
Oh my god.
And he just like continues fighting that way. It was fucking nuts, lah.
Ah, that's such a good visual.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So part of me thinks the chair must have been gimmick.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so, because there's a concussion right there.
Yeah. I feel like rappers are going to do that soon.
We're just wearing a chair around their neck.
It'll be blinged out.
Like a chain.
Like with diamonds and gold and all that.
Then if you get tired, you can just
sit down. Cannot, got the hole in the chair.
No, you just sit at the side. Or you go masjid.
Another match I do want to talk about is Hiromu Takahashi.
Yeah.
Who returned recently in Wrestle Kingdom.
Wrestle Kingdom, yeah.
If you remember, he was away for 2 years.
Due to a neck injury.
During a match against Dragon Lee, he took a Dragon Driver. He broke his neck in the middle of the ring. There was speculation that he might
ended his career.
He ended his career. Or like, you know, that night itself, there was like, it was life threatening.
It
like,
was.
He could have died, you know. He's back 2 years later. And he returned in an incredible singles match against Will Ospreay.
Last month.
Yeah. Which clearly showed that Hiromu Takahashi still gives no shits.
Ospreay was just dropping him on the neck over and over again.
It's part of the story now. The story is that, like, oh, let's target, like, Daniel Bryan's fucking hit, you know.
Yeah.
It just adds more drama. And they're like, oh, can lah, let's do it again.
Yeah, it's Japan.
And Takahashi is still doing, like, crazy, like, the Canadian destroyers on the apron kind of shit.
God,
you know?
Damn, this guy.
It was fucking nuts, lah. So it was perfect that when Takahashi reclaimed the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship against Will Ospreay, he now defends it against the man who broke his neck,
Ryuli
/ Dragon Lee, who is also the ROH TV champion. But Ryuli is kind of his face name in NJPW, because in ROH he's known as Dragon Lee. But this was a very, very good match that played off their history well. A lot of spots that kind of recalled their San Francisco match, where they tease the Dragon Driver, they tease like power drivers and stuff like that, you know. And the commentary did a great job of
bringing it back,
reminding you of those events and describing like the danger of it, you know. You know, it was one of those like old school Jim Ross feels like he's really afraid for your life. God, he has a family, that kind of thing, you know. Back when I believed that they really could die, you know. But like, I really felt that way during this match, because like Takahashi's neck was
the history,
like, it was just like fucking pounded on, la. And I like that despite these two being, you know, cruiserweight or junior heavyweight style guys, they did the high spots, but it was a very slow paced match where the high spots were chosen very well. They built up to the drama of like, oh, how's this neck gonna
hold up to this
insane spot, la. You know, so it was very nice, very high intensity, great drama. Takahashi and Ryu Lee, 46 and 44.
Wait, what?
Yeah, they've wrestled 90 times.
They've wrestled 90 times.
Huh? Takahashi and Ryu Lee.
Wait, what's the record again?
46 and 44. If you include tag matches.
46 and 44.
That's like Chelsea versus Arsenal.
Yeah. So Ryu Lee was leading 46-44. Now it's 46-45.
Oh, shit.
Wow. Yeah.
It's getting close.
It's getting close. Because Takahashi, if you recall back in the day, was loaned out to CMLL.
For his foreign tour.
Yes, or if you don't know, all Japanese wrestlers need to do that. They do just send them out to a foreign promotion and then you do a stint there for 6 months.
Everybody does that. Yeah.
Everybody does it. So he went to CMLL. He had a series of great matches with Dragon Lee there. One of the best feuds outside of the WWE that I've ever seen. That's when they had most of their matches. And then they brought it back to NJPW when Dragon Lee came in. The feud continues now, because at the end of the match, both of them pointed at each other. It's like, one more? Well, yeah, okay, one more.
Okay.
You know. Yeah, it's a bit like Keith Lee and Dominik Dijak.
Times a thousand.
Only times a lot more. But the caveat is, it does include tag matches.
Of course.
You know, because CMLL and NJPW, they like to do the 4-man, 8-man, 20,000-man. I think singles is more like they've only wrestled 20-ish times.
Still a lot.
But best to note that Dragon Lee has never beaten Takahashi in NJPW. He's 6-0 in NJPW.
I love Dragon though. Dragon Lee's my favorite. One of my favorite guys.
Yeah, I know. One of your BBBW guys. Your champion Jeff Cobb recently signed to AEW.
For a while only.
He's a free agent. He's a free agent.
The hottest free agent. That's what they say.
Yeah, the hottest. Okay, the main event also.
Naito.
Champ. Naito 2 belts. Tetsuya Naito, who is the IWGP Heavyweight Championship champion and Intercontinental Champion.
Took on Kenta.
If you recall, at the end of Naito's historic win at Wrestle Kingdom 14, Night 2, Kenta attacked him.
Yeah, at the last
setting part. Up a feud. Yeah. We didn't quite talk about it during our Wrestle Kingdom 14 review.
Yeah, we did.
But I was a bit annoyed because Kenta had lost two matches in Wrestle Kingdom Night 1 and Night 2.
Mm-hmm.
He
mm-hmm.
lost his NEVER Openweight belt. So I was like, why does this guy get to challenge for the champ for both yeah. the Intercontinental belt and the Heavyweight Championship belt yeah. when, you know, he just lost two matches in a row?
Exactly.
Mm. And it feels very WWE Sports Entertainment booking, like, oh, I attack you, so therefore I get a championship yeah. you know, mm. opportunity or whatever. But in the end, like, the match was great, so
no complaints then.
I mean, I would complain if Kenta won.
Yeah.
yeah.
If Kenta won, I was like, what the fuck, you know, he didn't deserve it, you know.
That's but, a WWE moment right there.
But this is kind of a transitional main event. They yeah. needed a big name for yeah, yeah. For a mid-tier pay-per-view
yeah.
to sell tickets.
Yeah.
And Kenta being a very popular...
A season opener, yeah, yeah. essentially.
Yeah. Last year, this Osaka event did 5,000 attendees.
Oh,
yeah. okay. This now? Year, it did 11,000 on the strength of Naito and Kenta.
Okay,
so then. I see why the main event was put together. La.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job.
Because, you know, there's only so many times you can do Naito Okada, Naito Tanahashi, blah, blah, yeah. blah, you know. But okay, like, Kenta is new.
Yeah.
He still has the WWE sheen on him and Pro Wrestling yeah. Noah sheen on him.
Yeah.
Fresh eaten heel, Bullet yeah. Club leader, etc.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bullet Club leader.
Yeah. What puzzled me about this match at yeah. first, I thought I was going to hate it.
Yeah.
Oh.
I ended up loving it.
Okay.
So
okay.
the first 10 minutes of the match, right, featured like 5 seconds of action.
Oh shit.
5 seconds of actual physical contact with each other.
They were just circling each other.
So Kenta at first, you know, he's not a heel, right?
Yeah, he
so
is.
Kenta came in and yeah. then like he did that thing where he always rolled out of the ring every yeah. time Naito wanted to engage.
Yep.
You know, like Kevin Owens sometimes does, yep. you know. He just yep. kept rolling out.
Yeah.
The intention is to frustrate Naito.
Yeah.
But when this is what won me over, because Naito isn't a face.
Yeah, he's a tweener.
Naito is... No, he's a heel who people cheer. It's different from kind of a tween. But he doesn't do face things. You know?
He doesn't.
Naito is a despicable heel from LIJ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he tranquilo deal.
He doesn't get frustrated. He just like did the tranquilo, you know, the Andrade pose, you know, the LIJ pose in the middle of the ring.
Okay.
And just like... And he actually said in Japanese, the commentator translator, yeah. like, I can do this for 60 minutes, so it's still a successful defense.
Yeah. That's right.
He just like waited, you know, just chill, like whatever.
If you don't do anything, don't do anything. Yeah.
And then at one point, Kenta rolled back in. He himself got frustrated by the fact that his
opponent was frustrated. Oh, he got reverse psychology.
So Kenta rolled back in. As he rolled back in, Naito hit a baseball dropkick on Kenta.
Oh, nice.
And then did the pose again, and Kenta went out. And then Kenta was like fucking fired up. You know?
Yeah.
He's fucking infuriated. So he came in, he attacked Naito. But then Naito rolled out.
He tranquiloed him.
So now when Kenta wants to fight, like, Naito keeps rolling out for the next 5 minutes. So I was like, oh my god, there's nothing happening here, but I'm loving
it's perfect.
It.
Yes,
yeah. This was 5 minutes.
5 minutes each.
Because so remember,
Kenta took 5 minutes. Kenta took 5 minutes. And then Naito was like, oh, we'll see how you like it. What happens when I roll out?
Oh, that's perfect comeuppance though.
Roll out.
Perfect Yeah. I mean, even small things, like for example, Kenta came out with the entire bullet club. Yeah. With like fucking like 14 people, and then they were all like surrounding Naito and all that.
Same with Bullet Club, it was like 2 of them.
No. The whole roster of Bullet Club was out.
Then what about LIJ? Were they
so there? They weren't. Naito was like, fuck it, I don't care.
Yeah.
So they were all like trying to intimidate Naito, trying to intimidate Red Shoes. Yeah. Tamatonga made the mistake of pushing Red Shoes to the floor. And then Red Shoes was like, oh, I was looking for a reason to throw you all
bye bye. You don't do that. Red Shoes is like the ref that kicks everybody out all the time.
Yes, exactly. It was quite nice. Brilliantly paced match. When it came to the end, the last 15 minutes was the real meat of the match.
Yeah.
But the first half of it was just pure like punting and psychology, which also works.
Yeah.
If you do it well.
Yeah. Correct. It's not like...
So the wrestling was only 25 minutes.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much. With NJPW style matches, especially main events, the first 10 minutes of the actual match is just them holes, armbars, side headlocks, kind of that, and then it really ramps up, like classical wrestling, right?
Yeah.
So that 10 minutes only happened after 10 minutes of nothing. And it was still exciting.
It was.
You know, it was
still
exciting.
I can imagine, yeah.
I also loved NJPW commentators because they, Red Shoes also refereed Moxie versus Suzuki.
Suzuki, yeah.
Which was interesting because the match only like 10% of it took place in the ring.
The rest were outside.
There were tables, there were chairs, as I was talking about, they were fighting on the ramp, they were fighting in the crowd. They even had to make an announcement, you know, to, for the crowd to like step back from them. Because like I think usually with American crowds they will step back, you know. The Japanese crowd just sat there as like Moxley like power slammed a guy onto a guy's lap, you know.
Oh my
and then the guy was just like still sat there and just like look at him.
It's the Jets when they're unfazed. They're unfazed by these sort of things.
So the commentators had to say that Red Shoes didn't want to call for a DQ because it's a not DQ match. Yeah. It's a non DQ match. Yeah. It's a normal match. They just explained that Red Shoes was afraid of calling a DQ because both of them would probably murder
kick
him.
Yeah. Kick him in the balls.
It's just like, okay, we'll see who wins. At least give an explanation for why the ref is letting this continue. Because Red Shoes is like, oh, both these guys are probably going to murder me
if I stop this match.
Yeah. Wow, that's so good.
In Sapporo, the best match that happened was Will Ospreay versus Zack Sabre Jr.
Okay.
Zack Sabre Jr. has been the Ref Pro British Heavyweight Champion
forever
for the longest time. And part of the story of Ref Pro is that, okay, Will Ospreay has rightly been claiming, right, that he is the best wrestler in the world.
Yeah.
Yep.
Over the past 3 years, his kind of record, all the match of the year candidates he has, makes a good argument for it, best wrestler in the world.
Yeah.
Zack
Sabre, in terms of consistency,
Yeah, he says that all the time on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
Zack Sabre Jr.'s argument is that you aren't even the best wrestler in Britain, let alone the world, because Zack Sabre Jr. is 4-0 against Will Ospreay over the last 7 years in terms of the Ref Pro British Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah.
Ospreay has challenged a bunch of times over 7 years. Zack Sabre Jr. has just wiped the floor with him, beaten him all the time, 4-0. So this is their fifth match at Sapporo.
Yeah.
You know, happened again. What a clash of styles, you know, because Will Ospreay is the high-flying acrobat.
And Zack is that guy who does all sorts of funny submissions.
A beautiful mat bait.
Grappling.
Beautiful grappling. Just elegant.
Elegant, you know, elegant that's grappling. A good word.
So what a great clash of styles, right? Yeah. And just the way they fuse together both elements into, you know, sometimes he does a high-flying move, he catches him in a leg lock, or he gets out of a tricky submission by, like, you know, flipping, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just beautiful wrestling.
Yeah.
Towards the end, Zack Sabre Jr. catches an octopus hold on Will Ospreay.
Yeah.
Ospreay doesn't tap, but he passes out.
Oh.
So he's now, so Zack Sabre Jr.
Five
now
5-0.
So 7 days later, they had a rematch at a Ref Pro event in Britain called High Stakes, which I watched as well. Uh-huh. Because the main event was Will Ospreay versus Zack Sabre Jr. So I was like, fine, I'll watch this here.
Yeah.
This is when Will Ospreay finally beat Zack Sabre Jr. for the belt. So this is the first time he's ever been British champion.
Will Ospreay is now British champion.
First time ever.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So an equally fantastic match with a nice complimentary fusion of styles. Also.
And different enough from the match in Sapporo.
Correct. Yeah. Also building off spots that they had already established, you know.
God
damn. They changed it, you know. Yeah. It was very nice. There was actually like 3 title changes at Ref Pro. This girl called Jichelle Shaw won the British Women's Championship. And another guy called Michael Oku wins the Ref Pro Undisputed British Cruiserweight Championship. So it almost felt like a changing of the guard for the promotion also. And watching kind of Ref Pro and watching Ref Pro in NJPW, where their belt's always dependent, I think they have a partnership.
A
bit like Evolve and NXT,
yeah,
you know, kind of thing. It's hard to say that NXT has a monopoly on British talent, because it does feel like it sometimes when you watch NXT UK.
Yeah.
You know, and I see like stuff like Progress has been decimated, the entire roster has just been eaten up
by UK.
Like when, as I mentioned earlier on, when Will Ospreay and Zack Sabre Jr. are out there, it's hard to say that WWE has the best British wrestlers.
Because they didn't get those two.
You know, It saddens me. Like, I really want to see Tyler Bate versus Zack Sabre Jr. Specifically.
I mean, will they do one-offs. Like, Zack was on the Cruiserweight Classic the first time.
Yeah, Zack. Yeah. So was Ibushi.
And Ibushi also was there. Mm-hmm. But those are the two that famously did not sign.
Correct. I just want to see a four-man tournament, like this NXT versus NJPW, where Will Ospreay, Zack Sabre Jr., Pete Dunne, and Tyler Bate.
That'd be so awesome.
In like a semifinals, you know.
A tournament of, wow, that would be cool.
I feel like the finals has to be Tyler Bate and Will Ospreay.
Right.
But Tyler Bate versus Zack Sabre Jr. in a grappling contest.
Will be interesting.
And then the clash of styles of Pete Dunne and Will Ospreay will be great as well. But that one, Will Ospreay will win.
That's
how the finals, Will Ospreay, Tyler
Bate? I don't know. It depends on who's hosting the tournament.
Oh.
Then that's the person that will go over.
it'd be cool if like the let's say WWE hosts it and then the NJPW guy wins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be quite interesting.
Yeah. Because NJPW has been so hesitant to work with AEW in an official capacity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mostly because the Young Bucks and Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, the way they left NJPW was quite acrimonious.
It was. Yeah.
They were very angry about as they departed, there was apparently a lot of bad blood, heated words, to the point where recently Kenny Omega came back for a DDT show in Japan.
Yeah.
NJPW apparently pulled some strings to get his visa cancelled, so he was detained in the airport and deported because of NJPW. So that's
not kayfabe.
This is the relationship with them, lah.
No, but that's the thing. NJPW is also, you know, it's crazy, lah. How much
backstage
leverage,
yeah. So that's why AEW kind of doesn't want to work with NJPW, because the executive vice presidents have such bad blood, lah.
Yeah.
But some of the wrestlers they have to that they sign on contracts, you know, non-restrictive contracts, John Moxley is okay, lah. If you want to work with them, fine. If Chris Jericho wants to work with them, fine.
Yeah.
You know, because they haven't quite worked with NJPW for a long time.
Yeah.
Or ever, lah. John Moxley's never worked with NJPW.
That was his first time.
Yeah, Chris Jericho in this run, first time also, lah.
In this run.
So they're not gonna like disallow them to kick something off the bucket list.
I mean, the last time Jericho was on NJPW was in the 90s.
Sometimes I forget how long Chris Jericho has been
around. Yeah, he's been around for very long.
He was in CMLO in the 80s.
Exactly.
Also. That's where he got his Lionheart name.
Yeah.
He said, like, Chris Jericho has wrestled for 4 decades.
Yeah.
Has he? 80s, 90s, 2000, 2010s.
Late 80s, lah. Late 80s.
But it still counts.
Counts, like, yeah.
5 decades, because 2020 is a new decade.
How old is Chris Jericho now? 102?
He's 40 plus, lah. Late 40s, really, lah.
I think almost 50, lah.
Yeah. But the guy can still, I mean, he's not like the prime of his life, of course, but.
Because his CMLO run was around 86 or 87 or 88, like that.
I know it's late, lah. Late 80s, definitely, when he started.
Then 90s was WCW, lah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Attitude Era / WWE.
For the
longest time.
The Ayatollah of Rock and Roller.
Yeah.
That was the coolest name. Yeah. Ayatollah of Rock and Roller.
Rock and Roller. So yeah, I would recommend you go watch NJPW New Beginnings in Osaka. Because this is a great card top to bottom.
Yeah.
Sapporo wasn't such a great card, but it's worth it for the Osprey versus Zack Sabre Jr. match.
Mm-hmm.
And do go download or stream RevPro High Stakes as well, because that mini event was spectacular. Okay. Again, Zack Sabre Jr. and Will Ospreay killed it.
Yeah.
Actually, RevPro is available on NJPW World. So that's where you can get it if you want.
They're partnered now, yeah.
They have their own streaming service, but if you already have NJPW World, just watch it on NJPW World. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He does this where he like buys a month subscription whenever like there's a big thing coming up.
Yeah.
It's smart.
Like this, huh? You bought for this month, I guess.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Specifically for Will Ospreay and Zack Sabre Jr. You know?
Or just cancel your WWE Network, guys.
No. You need sometimes.
I haven't signed up to WWE Network for 2 years.
Yeah, we're using Shafiq's account.
I don't even watch Raw and SmackDown. Guys.
We don't watch Raw and SmackDown anymore.
And once in a while,
don't tell people that.
We do the highlights. We told them the last.
We watch everything.
No, they know. We watch. We told them.
No, they don't. I don't want to risk Hizay not being able to sign for WWE. Okay.
Don't be a CM Punk and don't watch anything.
Yeah.
Can't believe that CM Punk doesn't watch any of the product.
He really lost interest in wrestling.
I know.
That's why.
But that's why it's so weird that they put him on the Fox show.
He's really run out of money, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, his UFC career didn't pan out, lah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think it would be interesting if he became a UFC commentator, though.
With all the knowledge that he has, right?
Not commentator, sorry. One of those guys that do like the here and there, lah. I mean, you can learn knowledge. Yeah. You don't have to be good at it to talk about it.
I know. One of my favorite commentators is Mike Goldberg, so I get it.
Oh yeah, god damn, you retired.
But Mike Goldberg, Mike Goldberg's in Bellator.
He left UFC. Retired. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So Hadi actually wants to talk about the XFL for some reason.
Oh shit, XFL
on our pro wrestling podcast. So I'm gonna give him some time because he's been kind of bugging me on this.
I just say that. Oh my god, the XFL is actually good.
Yeah,
it's
no,
not
no,
bad.
It wasn't bugging, like, it was just the unreplied messages on our WhatsApp where like nobody gave a shit about the XFL. Yeah.
We don't reply.
And then you were talking about all the ratings and like the rules and like nobody replied.
Yeah, nobody
like,
did
I'll
reply.
Talk about it. Okay, can go ahead. This is your XFL.
Yeah, this is your time.
So because I'm the only one that watch American football, I'm a huge NFL fan. Oh. And NFL only lasts from September until early February, like when the Super Bowl happens. Mm. So there's always this big dearth from February, early February, all the way to September, where there's no football at all.
Yeah.
So there's always been this interest to create a league like, during that period of time, a spring league, as they call it. So 2 years ago, the XFL was announced like, that they're going to revive it. Like. Now, if you all remember the XFL back in 2001, it was insane as balls.
Okay.
There was a few innovations that worked. Things like the sky cam, things like the cameras on the field and all that. All that was adopted by the NFL eventually. Like the 2 years after that. Yeah. So those innovations worked. But the problem with the XFL the first time round was that there was no focus on the football. The big problem there, like, you know, the whole product was about football and you're not focused on the football.
Yeah. Hey, all you have to do is go watch wrestling. Yeah, quote-unquote sports entertainment with no focus on wrestling.
Exactly. So it's this weird time.
Almost only.
Yeah, so there was one of the famous things that was in the old XFL was that players could have their nicknames on the back of their jerseys.
Mm, yeah, I remember this.
Yeah. So you had one guy, the famous one was that he had He Hate Me on his jersey as his name. So they asked who the fuck is He Hate Me?
Yeah.
And then he said, and everybody who plays against me, you know, it's like He Hates Me. So anyway, that was the only thing. There was like a new kickoff rule and all that where they scramble for the ball. And the first time they did that, there was a huge injury.
Like dodgeball.
No. They'll throw the ball, then these two guys will just run after the ball.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But due to the impact and just the way that there was a lot of injuries
literally
that came out.
Literally the first kickoff somebody got hit.
Yeah, exactly. First kickoff of the fucking entire league.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a terrible mess. And the quality of football was not there because a lot of the players only had a month.
They had one great game though that was cut off because they ran over.
They ran over.
So you didn't see the fourth quarter. It was amazing.
There was so much. There's this 30 for 30 documentary a year ago.
They had one great game. One fantastic, super dramatic game that bought everybody into XFL, but because they underpaid on television time, because they were paying for it to air, not the other way around. So they ran out of time, and at the end of the fourth quarter where the dramatic thing happens, they
moved on to the next program already.
Yeah, and nobody saw what happened.
Yeah, so after the first, because the first league, this was 2001, so the first match garnered like an insane amount of US, like 50 million nearly there, you know, which is half of what the Super Bowl gets, but still an amazing amount of people. But the drop off on the week after and all that was insane also. So from 50 it became like 1 million or something like that, some ridiculous amount of but that's because again the problem was there was no focus on the fucking football.
Yeah.
Focus was on cheerleaders and going to the cheerleaders' rooms and all that. This was a different time. This was before #MeToo.
Well, it's the Attitude Era time.
So they wanted to leverage using the WWE name. So you know, you had The Rock, Stone Cold making appearances and all that, and all this cross promotion kind of thing just didn't work. Because at the end of the day, the reason why football fans want to watch football is because there is good football. American football. So now we fast forward to 2020. Right, 2 years. This league has been in development for 2 years. So you have Vince McMahon putting in now nearly $500 million into this project.
Wow.
So that's a lot of money. Because the last time he only put $50 million.
Okay.
Yeah. So this time, you know, he's a lot more money, a lot more time before the league starts. So 2 years was where they developed the new rules, they developed the players, they scouted players. And they had a whole system in place where they actually hired football executives to come in and to run the place. So Vince McMahon is also not really on the day-to-day.
Yeah.
He's more of the big negotiator. He negotiates, I think, the TV deals and all that stuff. So
business
side. So the good thing is that this time it is on Fox, ESPN, and ABC, if I'm not wrong.
Nice.
So all the games are very highly accessible. And there's this dearth of football this time around.
Yeah.
After the Super Bowl. So,
yeah.
And then because of the long time that they took to set up the league, 2 years, they managed to get relatively good quality players. Not the best.
Yeah.
Definitely far from the NFL quality, but still something entertaining.
Okay.
So the first week went by, you know, they had decent numbers, you know.
Yeah.
They had entertaining matches, you know. There's still a dearth of talent, you can see, but it was entertaining.
Okay.
And now week two has just passed by.
Yeah.
some qualities, some matches the quality is a bit lower, but yeah. the rest, you know, still like you really have like you can tell that who are the favorites really. You know, you're like okay, like the DC Defenders are the favorites. You know, the Houston Renegades are the favorites. Thank God they didn't keep the names of the from the old XFL, like the Demons and the and the Outlaws and all that stuff.
Those are good names though.
Those are good names, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But they are more like for your American football like video game rather than a proper league, like, I guess.
Or were they all related to like wrestling?
They tried to push towards that very cartoony kind
Outlaws.
Of yeah, they had like
New Age Outlaw.
Yeah, they had like the something Rage. You know, wow, the names of the teams.
Oh, okay,
The names of the teams last time was more aggressive,
attitude
more like
era,
attitude era. Yeah. Now they had the Defenders, the Guardians, the Tampa Bay Vipers.
Yeah, feels more American.
Superhero-y?
A bit more lah.
Yeah.
Then you have the...
I mean, except for Vipers, which reminds me of Randy Orton.
Yeah, exactly, me too. You have the LA Wildcats, you know, like more football, like focus more on the football.
Sports, yeah.
And the quality is there. There's a few like stars in the making you can see already who most probably will go on to the NFL after this season. The thing is, they are... The way that the XFL can succeed is as a feeder league to the NFL.
It's NXT.
In a way.
Okay.
It is the NXT of the American football. Okay. But obviously, it'll take some time. We have to see how this year turns out. But so far, so good. Mm. Don't have all the controversy that the 2001 season had.
Yeah.
The numbers are still strong.
Yeah.
Stadium attendances are still not bad.
Okay.
Like there's a dip in some of the places, but then there's a rise in other places. Yeah. This is the second week, so this is like the first home game for a few teams.
Okay.
So that's why the numbers are still stabilized.
Yeah.
So you have to see in the coming weeks whether the XFL can actually maintain this kind of numbers.
Yeah.
The TV numbers are about 2 to 3 mil.
Okay.
Yeah, per match, which is decent enough.
Decent, yeah.
You know, which is more than your NXT.
Yeah.
You know, and other a lot of other programming out there.
Mm. Actually about the same as SmackDown and Raw.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we'll see lah, because the most important thing is whether they can get a TV deal next year. If they get a TV deal next year, then definitely the league can continue lah. Yeah, the problem that the last time was that there was no TV deal after that initial investment.
Interesting.
What do you think will happen?
From the looks of it,
yeah.
We'll see lah. Week 3 is the critical
this
week.
This is week 3?
This week 2.
Okay.
Just finished. So week 3 will be the critical week.
So yeah. I'm not a sports analyst despite like following a lot of sports like, you know, like I watch sports, you know.
Yeah,
I don't analyze like the business side of it. Like.
Yeah.
But I do pay quite close attention to TV and
TV numbers.
So I can say with certainty, right, that XFL will be picked up. Because this is an age where most shows are struggling to get 1 million viewers.
Yeah.
I'm talking about big shows, you know. I'm talking about your NCISs, they're only getting 5 to 6 million.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Hmm.
Back in the day
they used the 20 to 30.
Easy.
Easy.
These days
TV habits lah.
TV habits have changed. People are DVRing, people are watching online, people are streaming on Hulu or Netflix or whatever. It's just a different age, you know.
Yeah.
The only thing that seems unaffected by this is live content.
Yeah.
Mm.
Except for it's live content. And for a market that's just dying for something for
doing
people
this
to watch live.
Yeah.
The money is in live because you don't get to skip commercials.
Mm-hmm.
You're watching the commercials and that's where the money comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Streaming doesn't have that, you know.
Yeah.
So they're just dying for live content, and XFL is a new live content thing. Mm.
Yeah.
You know? So unless you are like, you have significant IP like Star Wars or Marvel or whatever, live sports is where it's at.
I agree. Yeah.
Or sports entertainment, which is why the Fox deal is so expensive.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the interesting things that happened was that because they have this thing where they are all about transparency.
Yeah.
So they have cameras everywhere now and they have like your on-field reporters that are going to players straight after a play.
Mm.
So one of the things that happened week one was that this player was given, the mic was thrown into his face. Like, they asked, what happened there?
Yeah.
And this player just went on a rant.
And
like, so just said the F word. Like, we just have to fucking like do something about this. And then, so then they didn't bleep that out because it happened so fast.
Yeah.
But then they bleeped him out for the next 6 seconds.
Yeah.
So you didn't hear what the hell he said after that.
Yeah.
that kind of mistake still happened.
That's adrenaline. That's why other sports don't do it.
But you want to do this because this is the entertaining aspect of it, where you get a real reaction from the players and all that. Yeah.
That's,
and
that's wrestling, but it works for wrestling because it's scripted.
Correct.
You know.
For live sports, it's a whole other issue.
Yeah.
Because wrestling, they do it all the time. Somebody just loses a big match
and
somebody comes up to them and is like, what the fuck do you think I feel like?
Yeah.
So another one was a kicker.
Yeah.
So a kicker, he missed a kick and immediately they asked him, what happened there? And the guy was like, oh, I just need to work on my kick and all that. You feel so bad for him because he just fucked up, you know?
Yeah.
But in a way, it's also entertaining.
Yeah.
Another interesting little tidbit is that the officiating is way more transparent. Okay. So this is something that the NFL has been struggling with for the past few years. There's always been games where there's a game-changing officiating call that causes a team to lose.
Yeah.
It happened twice over the past 2 years where the New Orleans Saints were the receiving end of it.
Yeah.
You know, so now with this, now you get to listen to what the referees are saying to one another, which I think in normal football also, they don't do that, right?
Nope.
You can't hear what the referee says, right?
Nope. Not in any sport.
Yeah, so right now, you know, you can hear what the referee says, go through their, you know, thought processes and all that, and therefore you're like, ah, okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
Or you can be like, oh, fuck, that really doesn't make sense.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, but I think because of all the scrutiny now, you have like two referees, one the sky judge, one on the field.
Yeah.
I think there's a lesser chance of fucking up.
Yeah.
You know, when the sky judge is given the authority to overrule things on the field.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because the VAR judge in soccer also does that, what?
Yeah.
That they overrule. But the thing is, you don't hear what the sky judge is saying. Yeah.
You need like some analyst on TV, and it's always like Michael Owen, who has like
Michael
no idea what's happening.
But yeah, so the XFL is interesting. It is adjacent to our good friends.
Yeah.
And there's a petition going on to name the XFL championship the McMahon Cup.
Wow.
I feel like it'll be something up for grabs in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
The McMahon Cup.
Oh, the McMahon Cup.
Yeah.
There's the random 8-man contest for some new cup, the Tawik Trophy or something.
Oh, is it?
For Super Showdown in 2 weeks' time. Which we will be reviewing, actually.
We will be reviewing that.
Because it's just a day before AEW Revolution, so we might as well just like talk about both of them together. Like,
I mean, we have no expectations for Superstars Showdown, lah.
Super Showdown.
Super Showdown, sorry.
Except for maybe another great Mansoor match.
Mansoor, lah. That's the only
thing. You know, for how much shit I gave the last Super Showdown, that Mansoor Cesaro match was great.
That's true.
Yeah. But mostly because Cesaro. But I mean, it was still.
Yeah. Maybe he fights Cesaro more time.
Ooh. I wouldn't mind. Like, I just want Cesaro to get matches.
Yeah, because I miss him.
I don't care where and when.
Just as long as he's on TV.
He was playing the cowbell, guys.
Yeah.
Last week.
Was he?
He was on the cowbell. What's this? A promo.
Why?
What's his name? Sami Zayn wanted to do like a protest.
Okay.
So he had a ukulele and then Cesaro had a cowbell and then they were just about to start playing and then Elias came in. Yeah.
Oh.
But he was playing the cowbell for a while. It was great.
Where are all these
very
like
talented guy
young people? I mean, Cesaro and Sami Zayn are not young.
Yeah.
But like, it's so sad that they wasted their prime on the main roster just doing rubbish, you know?
Like, I mean, they did their best with it. But you're right,
But
it was
a waste.
La.
I guess the roster is packed. I mean, if you look at the Super Showdown and WrestleMania, how would these guys get spaces when there's so much hot young talent like Bill Goldberg and Brock Lesnar? You know.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
The Undertaker.
Yeah, hot young talent. Yeah.
Okay, to be fair, Undertaker has been giving shine to people a lot, also,
Really?
I mean, that was the story that
like that time he squashed Bray Wyatt 3 years ago.
Oh no, I forgot about that. Yeah. Okay, never mind. I take it back.
In like 8 seconds.
I mean, what?
Or when Bill Goldberg beats like Kevin Owens for the Universal Championship.
Yep.
Fuck lah, Goldberg was crazy lah. That one. That was such bad booking.
I really just want Bill Goldberg and Matt Riddle to fight. You know,
Super
Bill,
Showdown.
Bill Goldberg takes tries to shoot on Matt Riddle and then it turns to a real fight and then everybody just lets it go. See what happens.
Yeah.
But Goldberg's a very nice guy though. Outside the ring.
I guess.
I mean, I love all his like TV shows and all that. All this like car shows he does and all.
Okay.
I just wish he doesn't wrestle anymore. You know what I mean?
I know.
We all wish. Yeah. If he just could just leave it alone. But I guess the money is too good to pass lah.
Before we leave, right? Let's try to predict WrestleMania a bit. It is the biggest card of the year.
Yeah.
What do you guys think will be like the top matches?
Roman Reigns
against.
Actually, I have no idea. Now that I think about it. Who do you think will be the main event?
Talking about this.
Okay, that'd be the Charlotte Rhea Ripley is already booked.
Correct.
So we know that's going to be one of the main ones.
Drew Brock
is the second one.
But of all the unknowns, what do you think are the matches they're going to make?
Wow.
Like Roman, for example, is a big star who has no match.
Is Roman still going to go on?
Please don't. With Baron. No. Please Corbin. Don't. Oh my God.
But they're still doing it.
I got a feeling that's going to happen again.
I don't know. Actually, I know I just talked about this, but actually I wouldn't mind Roman Bogoberg. Because I legit don't know who's going to win that.
Oh my god, they will, like, Roman, they will spear each other.
Yeah.
And then they knock out.
Yeah, and then the show ends, right? Because yeah, the stadium explodes.
Yeah. Yeah. From their egos.
Hey, don't be that. Roman's ego is not that big.
Okay.
To be fair, Roman doesn't have a big ego.
No, sorry, Roman's ego is... Yeah, but the thing is, I don't know. Because McMahon is always like, gotta keep Roman looking strong.
Yeah.
And then Goldberg's like, I want to look strong.
Yeah.
I legit don't know how they're going to work that. So that's an exciting match.
If you put Goldberg again,
it's probably going to be
It's for Super Showdown. It makes so much sense, no?
True.
I want Roman to destroy Goldberg.
Is Goldberg fighting
Bray Wyatt? Huh?
It's Super Showdown. He's taking on The Fiend, right?
Is he?
Yeah.
What?
See, this is how you know that we were shooting about not watching the show.
Shafiq, I thought you watched it.
I only saw the cowbell scene.
I think it's Goldberg versus The Fiend for Super Showdown.
Okay.
Which is one of those, like, I also don't know how they're going to book it. Yeah. Because, you know, The Fiend is unbeatable monster. Goldberg is Goldberg.
Yeah.
You know. So, okay, we're actually looking at the Super Showdown card now.
Oh, no, we're not.
Oh, no.
Okay, scroll down.
Roman Reigns taking on King Corbin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Lesnar Ricochet, I remember that.
Oh, it's Goldberg and The Fiend.
Goldberg,
yeah. That's what he said.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, sorry.
AJ Andrade, Lashley, Rowan, R-Truth, Rusev for the White Trophy.
Okay, from this, okay, let's just talk Super Showdown first.
Okay.
Okay, definitely The Fiend has to win Goldberg.
Yes.
Most definitely.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's the whole Legends Killer kind of vibe thing that he's going for.
Yeah.
So the destroying of Goldberg might be...
Yeah.
That's it, lah. End of Goldberg,
lah. Another photo on the wall.
Yeah, lah.
Yeah.
AJ Styles, Andrade, Bobby Lashley, Eric Rowan, R-Truth. That one, I have no...
Low-key match of the night could be Seth Rollins and Buddy Murphy versus Street Profits.
That could be dope.
Yeah. That actually looks like a good match, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's definitely going to be a Mansoor match added later on, lah, but we don't know who.
The New Day is taking on The Miz and John Morrison.
Yeah. I feel a bit bad for Ricochet, though.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to get squashed.
I know.
Like a fly.
I know. But, like...
Yeah. But see, if Brock respects him, then...
Just do it. But, I mean, the way Ricochet can sell for Brock, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. He just flops around.
He's going to be turned into, like, an actual pretzel.
like 4 years ago, Ricochet and Will Ospreay were on the same level.
Yeah.
But, honestly, Will Ospreay has grown so much, right?
But Ricochet hasn't been given the room
grow. Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, lah. I was saying that Ricochet, sadly, hasn't been given the shine, lah.
Yes.
I mean, he was North American champion, lah, but even then...
The 6 months stint at NXT wasn't enough.
The
second he moved up to the main roster. Yeah.
Roman Reigns and King Corbin has now turned into like you and your cousin on a weekend playing Raw versus SmackDown. And then you're playing through every single available option. They're still cage match now. Then you don't shower. Then you just keep playing.
Before we go, just to promote, this Wednesday, probably the day that you're listening to this, Thursday is Singapore time, I guess, lah, for NXT and AEW. Speaking of steel cage matches, Wardlow makes his AEW debut against Cody in a steel cage match. There's going to be a 30-minute Iron Man match between Pac and Kenny Omega.
Nice.
That's happening at the same time as Lio Rush versus Jordan Devlin Velveteen Dream versus Roderick Strong. So if you are a fan of pro wrestling, right, watch both shows because they're going to deliver like incredible wrestling.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, definitely. We'll be back to review Super Showdown. We'll be back to review AEW Revolution.
I'll be back
in a couple of months. A couple of weeks.
Yeah. Then it'll be Elimination Chamber in March.
Interesting.
I'll be on reservist, so when I come out reservist, then we can do that.
When's your reservist?
In March.
First 2 weeks of March. When is Elimination Chamber?
8 March.
8 March. Okay lah. So
I think the weekend, I think I'll be...
We might be a bit late.
Yeah. Okay. A few days only lah.
Few days. Alright. Till then, this is it, Zer.
I'm Hardy.
And I'm Shafu.
Bye-bye.
Bye.